If you were playing 2020 bingo at the beginning of the year and unexpected cards were going to come through, one of them that I don't think anybody thought would be covered would be the Washington football team changing their name. I said a few weeks ago, if it happened, it would be surprising to many people and it would be a sign of a massive cultural change. Now we wake up this morning with the breaking news that it is expected today that the Washington football team will announce that they are changing their team name. Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. Jason Fitz Infiltrate sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. And, hey. Welcome back.
I'm back. I'm for three more weeks.
Yeah.
we're on the countdown.
It's not getting crazy.
Yeah, exactly. For those that may not know, this whole Golic and Wingo thing ending July 31st, our last show. We'll get into more of that. But this certainly, the breaking news of news isn't really breaking because we already knew the news.
Well, and it's also not news because they're not announcing a new name at this point. Right, they're going to save that for a further date. So it is news that they're not going to call it the name. We already knew they were probably not going to call it.
Right.
But they're not going to tell us the new name yet. This is like when Ron Rivera came out at the beginning of this. And he's like, me and Daniel Snyder have talked. I have a couple names I like. I'm not going to tell you them right now. But just know that I have a couple of them and I like them.
How about the position of Ron Rivera? Coaches change teams all the time. You get a new first-time head coach or you get a coach who coached another team, coaching a different team now. He's coaching a different team and now is involved in the name change of a different team. I mean, that's something I don't think you really expect when you're taking over the head coaching job.
And by the way, I mean, you talk about a legacy. It doesn't matter what Rivera does. I mean, he is a part of this conversation at this point, so he'll be a part of a conversation around whatever the name is. Now, Junior mentioned, they're not going to tell us what the new name is. Not totally surprising to me. Something I've been asking and continually trying to mention to people is trademark law is very complicated. So it's not like you just wake up one day and say, we have a new team name, because you have to go through copyrights and trademarks. Apparently they're going through that process, but I always thought it was funny that the Titans, when they were being renamed from the Tennessee Oilers, they had a fan vote. And then it just happened to be miraculously that the fans picked the one name that the NFL already had a copyright on, the Titans, from all the way back in the day. So I think, you know, step one for the league is probably going through and saying, what names do we already own that we can use? If it's not a name you can use, then you got to get all your attorneys and you got to start filing trademark and copyright. I understand them keeping it close to the vest until they figure that out.
Even the trademark part, then there's the make sure you don't have another name that's going to eventually be called out name. Right. I mean, there's
you want to get it right this time around.
I think I think we make it very, very easy. We can do all the background we want on this. It's got to be the Washington Sentinels, right, from the Replacements?
I'm
probably late to the party here because I've been gone for a little while.
Get your name jokes off. Yeah,
yeah. I'm sure others have brought that up, but wouldn't that just solve it all and be easy? After we do a complete deep dive on the meaning of Sentinels and all that and make trademarks and all that and make sure it's good, wouldn't that be the way to go?
Seems like it'd be the easiest possible solution. There's already a fair following in that one. You've got the great – I mean, any association with Keanu Reeves seems to be a pretty positive one that you can count on in this day and age. So,
Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests joined us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Shefty reported last week they're not going to use any Native American imagery.
Right.
So that's also another element of this. For anyone that hasn't been keeping up, the expectation is that their colors will stay the same, but nothing else about the team will. I wouldn't be surprised, gentlemen, to find out today they're changing the name. The team will officially announce that. We know that. When they announce a name, I wouldn't be surprised if they turn around and say it's going to take a while to generate that.
But I think to your point, there's a lot to look into for a name. Not only is the name, make sure you background check the name and then with the trademarks and such. For those that may not know, the Washington logo of an American Indian chief was actually designed by a Native American back in 1971. So that's how far back the logo goes. And so this is obviously a huge change in the NFL, but one, as soon as we have seen changes going and this got involved and then money got involved, like basically, $620 billion combined in basically money out there that you could lose, then all of a sudden, you know, that people are going to sit up and take a little more attention.
Yeah, I think it was people that managed about $620 billion worth of investments overall, not FedEx, just towards them.
But. FedEx, Nike, and PepsiCo received letters signed by 87 investment firms and shareholders worth a combined $620 billion, right.
That's why I said last week, if the name change happened to me, it would be the sign that we are in the greatest time of cultural change we've seen, I think, in my lifetime that I'm aware of. I mean, you know, you start to look at it, that's the bigger key to it. It's not just that the Washington football team is changing their name. If they're changing their name, you're right, because of money. But that speaks to how much has changed in the world over the course of the last, or in our country, over the last couple of months. Because the Nikes and FedExes have been happy to be in business up until this point with a team that was named after a racial slur. Now there's this greater awareness from customers, which affects businesses, which affects the team names. That's why I continually tell football fans in general, sports fans in general, if you want to affect change, the one way you can really do that is not by yelling on Twitter. It's by not spending any money. Once the Nikes and Amazons of the world became worried about having that gear on their website and that felt like it was not the right spot to be for where their customers are, that affected the change.
But I'm going to say this, though, and I agree with you as far as people can affect change. But a lot of times from the sports side, you rarely see the individual affect change.
True.
You see the companies affect change, right? You see the 87 investment firms that are combined worth $620 billion that makes that franchise sit up and take notice.
But I guess Jason's saying the pressure on those companies comes from the people.
Eventually
that comes because those investment firms and those companies believe that the people that support them will not keep supporting them if they stay down this path. Like, they feel that pressure from the consumer because that's who dictates a lot of what's
going on with them. But I guess I haven't seen that as much as I've seen when the company comes out.
But I guess that's what I'm saying. The company is doing that in response to the people that consume their product. So they're like, the companies aren't these bastions of morality. So they're not making this decision because they believe
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I don't think the company waits to hear from the people. I think the companies sometimes act in a move to not hear from the people. And in this case, it could be the possibility that they're doing it so they don't hear from their consumers. And they may or may not. And it may not be as many as they think, but they're doing it because of the perceived pressure that could become reality of the pressure that they're going to feel.
But I guess that's what I mean. Like, it all comes from the same place. Like, they believe their consumers will not like this decision, potentially.
If Nike thought that there was a ton of money to be made by continuing to sell the existing Washington stuff, would they? I mean, and this is the one area, not to be overly cynical with all this, but, you know, we've looked at FedEx so much coming in and saying, well, we want you to change the name. And that's great that FedEx has had an awakening. But let's not get it twisted. They've been happy being in business this name since 1998. That's the surprise. I think, yes, companies have affected the change. But I think they've affected this change largely because they either don't want the backlash from their customers or they think that it's not good for their customers. So it still comes down in that sense to a bottom line.
To that sense, you're right. It does come down to the customer, whether the customer has said something or whether they're thinking ahead saying this is going to affect the customer in a negative way if we stay behind this name. Because it's kind of like the Confederate flag. We were down the road before, right? And nothing happened. And then all of a sudden more pressure comes on it. And there's more pressure not today than there has ever been. So you really felt this time, because I know Daniel Snyder said he'll never change the name. And he brings up the Washington Post poll that they did where the high number of Native Americans had no problem with the name. He's got that in his pocket, you know, to pull out to show everybody. But this time it didn't matter. This time I think we all felt the ball was rolling down the hill and nobody was stopping this thing.
My biggest question going forward, and we won't have to answer this now, but that I'll have for anyone we talk to today, is why is this announcement happening today?
You sound like Jason Fitz here. What was it? Was it about John? Was it really, really about John? That wasn't very good.
No, that was a really good. Yeah. That was a really good impression.
Yeah. It's Golic and Wingo.
Thought it was pretty good.
Every time I hear it, I think, you know, it's impressive. Like, you do a better me impersonation than most people do. It's Golic and Wingo.
You know who does the best one of you?
Who?
Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Oh. I keep telling you, though, like, you know, that gives me a backup career plan.
Well,
like,
there you go.
I could I can move down there, like, put the outfit on, maybe get some voiceover work for the company. Like, it's all synergy. Disney, call me.
I can say, it's a natural, the helmet's a natural mask. You're in good business.
We can just add that on to my
natural mask. It's an artificial helmet. I'm dumb.
Wow. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic. Mike Golic Jr., represented by Progressive Insurance. And guys, we expected going into the bubble and the restart of practice across the NBA, there was the risk of injury, but the expectation with those would be, you know, soft tissue type injuries because the guys haven't been able to necessarily play at the same level or train the same way. There are still going to be regular injuries that just play, that happen in the course of play. And we saw that last night, and it's a significant one. Lakers guard Rajon Rondo has suffered a broken right thumb in practice. He's expected to return to full basketball activities in 6 to 8 weeks. He's going to undergo surgery to repair the fracture this week. So he's down in Orlando. Everybody's down in Orlando. This is a significant blow, Mike, to a team that is already dealing with some issues at depth, obviously, with Avery Bradley deciding he didn't want to play in the bubble. So they're now down two players before they even get the chance to step on the court to play anybody.
Yeah, listen, this can certainly be a tough situation in a quest for a championship. It's not going to affect their seeding as number one seed. Let's quickly discuss that. They're playing eight games, right? Eight games, regular season, quote-unquote games going in. They have a 5.5-game lead on the Clippers right now. So if my quick math says it right, the Clippers could go 8-0, and all the Lakers would have to do is win three of their eight games, and they would hold on to the top spot. So they're going to be – they'll be the top seed. Now it's just a matter of working through players and trying to find the combinations that you were doing in the regular season when you had combinations that now you don't have those combinations, and you can work on them now before you even get to this postseason.
Yep, and because you've got that flexibility in those eight games, it allows you to probably play around with that a little bit more. I think like Quinn Cook, Alex Caruso, guys that are going to have their names sort of in that process. In addition to the J.R. Smith signing. So you play around with those lineups, you experiment as much as you can in that and the way you would have down the stretch. You know, we were talking when we were going to resume play after the All-Star break anyway, and in the end of the season, you're talking about like a limited number of games where normally this is the case. You're ironing out the rest of your rotation. So now you just do it, I think, in a smaller sample size, but with a fair amount of importance coming off.
How about two of the guys you're going to rely on? One you just signed, the other you signed right before this all went to hell in a handbasket, J.R. Smith and Deion Waiters. Who have not played a minute yet for their respective team. Again, Deion came in right before this whole COVID thing happened and the break. So these two guys will certainly get their chance to, you know, to break a sweat, as they say, with the Lakers and find their place in the rotation. But boy, interesting two guys to be relying on.
Well, and it feels like if you go all the way back to last summer, this became the season of duos instead of trios in the season of tandems. And at the time, I remember coming into the season, our great debate was the Lakers were so top heavy but didn't have the depth. Could they win a title that way? Then they came together so quickly and looked so powerful during the course of the season that depth became less of a conversation. But these have to be the moments where the Clippers, who arguably, well, not arguably, have substantially more depth up and down, are looking across saying, hey, we're built to last in these sort of moments. So to the Lakers' discredit, depth's not always there. But to their credit, it hasn't been there throughout the course of the regular season. That hasn't mattered because their guys have played so incredibly well. So I still feel like if you look back at this and say, as long as Kuzma takes some step forward, which hasn't happened this season, but I still think could, they're an unbeatable team.
They're not unbeatable, but they're in a better spot now. Like places where attrition would have happened before. Like the Houston Rockets are much more interesting to me this postseason because usually what we see with them is one bad shooting stretch, James Harden finally get tired from a season of pounding the ball that now he's had time off of. Like the attrition and the or lack thereof on James Harden is a very interesting subplot going into this postseason that makes a team like that more viable. So you're right. The Clippers still have an edge up because defense is going to be the easiest thing to start off and come back with because it's not relying on your ability to shoot where some guys haven't had a freaking basketball for 8 weeks.
So
now,
I'll say this just for the intrigue of the 1-8 matchup, which we wouldn't expect anyone to lose to an 8. But given this situation, it wouldn't be so much Memphis who holds that 8 slot right now and the presumptive rookie of the year in John Morant, and what he's been doing has been incredible. But one of the teams that is trying to get there, remember, if there's that team within four games that at 8-9, they do the play-in. You know who's right there? Portland. Now you have a guardless Laker team, basically, or injuries there, and you have Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum coming in as one of the more dynamic duo point guard or guards in the league. That would make it at least an intriguing 1-8 if Portland were to take that A slot. I still think the Lakers would win, but you see the depletion of the guard position for the Lakers and what you have for Portland. At least I'm looking for some intrigue here in the bubble.
Yeah, I mean, just because, and it's purely off the memory of last year, because Portland's been so bad for most of this season. So, but the potent part of that lineup is in the worst possible spot for Los Angeles. Yes.
I really thought you were going to say potent potable. So you were going right there. I thought we were going to
have colors
our Jeopardy
that
moment.
End in Urple.
So does any of this change if you guys came into, and I don't know where you two came into it, but if you came into believing that the Lakers were the favorite in the West, does the loss of Rajon Rondo change that?
Well, I think they're still the favorite, but you have to, I think with Bradley not going there and Rondo being out, I do think you have to at least drop them down a little bit. I still have them a favorite. I'm going with the ones, you know, real stretch by me. The Lakers and Milwaukee meeting in the finals, but could that change? Sure. You know, my God, still what Toronto was done. Losing Kawhi Leonard, their number two in the Eastern Conference, just blows my mind. But everybody's seeing what Boston wants to do, or Philadelphia, if they're going to be healthy now. But, and obviously the Clippers out West. So I still think they're the favorite, but there's no way you can say as strong as they've been because they're losing people.
Yeah, you bet on the blue chips right now because I think the higher profile players are going to be the more likely ones.
Like, right, exactly.
In all sports, the higher profile players, the better funded teams, all of these are going to have a leg up in a time where resources have been hard to come by for the last 9 weeks. And so when you've got one of the total outlier in LeBron James, who's been all of that to the umpteenth power during this break, I think you come in with an immediate leg up on this the way that you do if you're a team in the NFL coming in with a veteran quarterback returning a bunch of your starters.
Totally agree that being a veteran team matters in this moment, not just because you're better suited to be a professional. Like Memphis is a team that I think has been incredibly fun to watch this year. I just don't know how they'll come into the bubble. We know how teams like the Clippers and Lakers will come into the bubble because there's more veteran leadership that already had systems in place that already understand what it means to be a pro every day, but also already because of the career that they've had their sort of training pieces and elements, I think, in place at a better level to understand how to be the best team they can be. So I'm with you, although I still think we're sleeping on the Clippers in general, who, Mike, to your point, not only do they play incredibly well defensively, but we've seen playoff Kawhi, and now playoff Kawhi's had a couple of months to get rested. So,
and boy, they have depth, and Lakers are certainly losing people by the drew.
Yeah, well, hopefully they all get onto the court as healthy as possible.
Reported first by Sports Business Daily. We're going to have John Jansen, former offensive lineman for the Redskins, join us in just 1 minute. The news comes 7 years after owner Dan Snyder told USA Today that he'd never change the name. The team's new nickname is expected to be announced at a later date and will not use any Native American imagery, as reported last week by our own Adam Schefter. In NBA, bad news for the Lakers. Their guard, Rajon Rondo, suffered a broken right thumb at the team practice last night in Orlando, and because of when it happened, they cannot replace him on the roster. The 34-year-old will undergo surgery to repair the fracture this week, and it's expected to return to full basketball activities in 6 to 8 weeks. Third injury suffered on the right hand in the last two seasons. In NASCAR, Cole Custer outlasted Kevin Harvick and Martin Truex, who were battling in the final lap. In that backstretch, Custer was able to get himself in position to win at the Quaker State 400 at the Kentucky Speedway to earn his first NASCAR Cup Series victory of his career. Custer became the first rookie regular to win in the Cup Series in nearly 4 years, and at 22 years old, is the youngest driver to win a Cup Series race at a mile-and-a-half track, surpassing the previous mark set by some guy named Jeff Gordon in 1994. On this date, July 13th, 1934, Babe Ruth becomes the first player to reach 700 home runs, doing so with a two-run shot off Detroit six-time All-Star Tommy Bridges. When he finished the 1934 season, he finished it at 708 homers. No other player had even hit 350. 50 at that time.
SportsCenter is brought to you by Goodyear. Goodyear believes that movement drives us forward, and they believe in the importance of a pit stop. Sometimes that's all it takes, a moment to pause before we all start moving again. So as you get ready for the road ahead, Goodyear's here to help. Visit Goodyear.com to learn more. Goodyear, more driven.
It went from predictions to reality as we wake up today to find out that there will be an announcement from Washington today from the football team, not of the new name, but at least of the fact that the team has decided after an investigation they will in fact change the name.
If we're going to talk about predictions, this could have been the easiest prediction of all time, right? I mean, this is going out on the least limb as possible that this was going to happen.
That we are going to get an announcement.
Yeah.
About an announcement that's going to come at a later date. Antennas are firmly up.
I mean, yes, and there's some, you can hear the cynical tone in some of our voices to the fact that this is, I mean, we've seen this coming. Let's be real about it. But we're going to get some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And in order to do that, we're going to head over to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line where former Washington football player John Jansen joins us. So, John, I'm really interested in your perspective because as we've been talking about on the show this morning, much has changed in the last couple of months of the world, and now it seems like something that was impossible is going to be a reality today with the name change. When you played for the Washington football team, was there some conversation behind the scenes from players about even what the name meant?
Honestly, there between the players, there really wasn't. We would get asked the question a lot about, you know, the controversy over the Redskins name, and quite honestly, we've been talking about this, but until you said former Washington player, that's where it kind of really hit me. That's the first time I've been introduced as a Washington player, not as a former Washington Redskin. So that kind of tells you where our mindset as players were, and we would get asked, you know, about the meaning of the name and. You know, most of us, and I was drafted by the Redskins, so I wasn't given that opportunity to say, hey, this is where I want to go play. I grew into enjoying playing in Washington. I respected Dan Snyder. And what you do when you take the field is you playing for the name on the back of your jersey. And that was Jansen. You're playing for the logo and the name and the team that is on your helmet, and you're playing for your family, you're playing for your coach, you're playing for the community that you are in and that you represent. And I always wanted to go out there and represent it with a guy that played hard, that played tough, that played physical, that would do anything to win. And that's really the mindset of the guys on the team, and it wasn't necessarily about what the logo meant. In regards to what we are talking about, that conversation was there. It just wasn't the conversation in the locker room.
John Jansen joining us. He was a second-round pick for Washington back in 1999. You played there till 2008 and finished your career in Detroit in 2009. So you said that was the answer you and some of the guys gave at that point. When you were done playing, did that change for you, the thought process of the name? And if so, when did that start to affect you?
After you start to look at things differently as you get older, and as you start to listen to more things, you read more things, you experience more things, and you start to look at the world around you and you say, you know what, when I was 22 years old, I really didn't have a great perspective on the world. And at 30, I didn't have the perspective that I do now that I'm 44. And I couldn't necessarily put a finger on when you start looking at things and go, you know what, that's probably not right. And then you look at it and you go, gosh, I really wish that something would change. And the only thing that I kind of cringe at sometimes is at when people dig their heels in and when you hear the word never. And we've all heard this throughout the sports community and throughout everything, that you hate it when somebody paints themselves in a corner, because then when they're forced to do something, then, you know, never means what now 7 years. And that's what Dan Snyder said 7 years ago. And that's the feeling that he had at that time. But we also have to give, you know, Mr. Snyder and the ownership group. Yeah, they were forced and there was a lot of pressure put on them to do this. And the reports are that they were making this decision, you know, and starting this discussion earlier than you know, when FedEx and Nike and everybody said that they were no longer going to support the team. So you've got to give everybody the opportunity to change. And there's it's never too late to change. It's never too early to change. But to when your eyes do get opened, and you know mine were, a lot of other people's have been, it's okay to make a change.
And I think as they get ready to make a change, a lot of people were worried about the ties to, you know, the glory days when Washington was feeling like a great team and Dan Snyder not wanting to lose out on a lot of those memories. But I understand, even through all the respect, was there ever a feeling, especially maybe after as a former player, when you started to get some perspective that Dan Snyder and the organization were kind of putting you guys in a tough spot of constantly, I'm sure, being asked about this as former players when they did dig their heels in?
Well, it was, you know, again, I was drafted there, so I had the easy out of saying that I, you know, it wasn't my choice. And at some point when you sign a free agent contract, you know, or you sign another contract to stay there, it becomes more of your choice. But after 10 years, I really felt a part of that Washington community and a part of what everything, you know, that I tried to stand for in regards to respect and playing hard and doing all those things. And I never felt like I was in a bad position in regards of trying to, you know, either I wasn't trying to defend anything. I was just trying to say, hey, this is what I'm going out and playing for, and just go out there. And as most football players do, as most athletes do, hey, we just want to go out there and play. That was more of an ownership decision. That was more of a decision that was going to be made by people that had, you know, just a heck of a lot more money than us and more power than we had.
It's kind of the old above my pay grade, you know?
Yeah, yes. kind
of, just, exactly. I'm just going out and playing.
We're talking to John Jansen, longtime Washington football team offensive lineman. And so, John, you know, we hear a lot, and I hear a lot on social media from fans that don't want the name changed. And they talk about history, as Junior just alluded to. So, as a former player, what would your response be to a fan that comes up and says that the name shouldn't be changed?
The history is still going to be there. You know, you can turn the TV on and you can go back on YouTube. You can go back on a lot of different, you know, apps or devices and look at all of the glory days of Joe Gibbs, of you know, the Hogs, and Russ Grimm, Joe Jacoby. And, you know, it's just that history is still going to be there. And the name, you know, in the city that you played in, I mean, that's one of the things too, when they talk about, hey, you know, RFK, when you leave RFK and you go out and you play at FedEx Field, yeah, the history changes, but you know, in terms of the history doesn't change. It's that you do have to change moving forward. You do have to evolve. You do have to do things that are differently than in the past, but you look back and you stay, you know, the stats are still there. The wins are still there. The Super Bowl championships are still there. It's still a part of the Washington football history.
Talking to John Jansen again, second round pick in 99 of the what we're now going to say the then Washington Redskins. We don't know what the new name is yet, John. Now, you know, this has been in the news for a while, so I you may have thought of something already, or I may be putting you on the spot. But I know you're not going to have a say in it. But if they were to send out to all former Washington Redskins players, hey, we're changing the name, what would you want as a new name? What would you submit as an answer?
You know what? I don't really. I'm not a very original person, so I have.
And you can't say the Hogs either.
Oh, come on. That's where I was going. No. Absolutely.
I know you were.
Seth, somebody else had said, I heard that, and I thought, you know what? I played at Michigan, right? And there's a great tradition of offensive linemen. So when I was drafted by the Redskins, Russ Grimm was the first one I talked to. And you know, I thought, my goodness, I get to go and be another part of a great tradition of offensive linemen and the Hogs. And I thought, wow, I you know, the logo would be a bit of a tricky part. because you don't want to have a big old pig on there with a big old snout. But I thought that would be a, you know, a little nod to, you know, if everybody wants to talk about the history of the Redskins, what is the one thing that you think about when you think about the Washington football team? You think of the Hogs. So why not call it the Washington Hogs?
See, I'm not as out on the big round pig as a mascot as you are on the helmet here.
I think I'm all in for a cute pig on a helmet, yes.
Well, no one said cute pig.
Cute pig on a helmet, come on. Cute pig on a helmet, come on.
Are there any cute pigs? The one person on the set who's never been – over 300 pounds yeah. saying cute pig. So
the marketing be through the roof.
So talking to John Jansen, you mentioned being a former Michigan offensive lineman. You host a podcast in the trenches. And I'm curious, as you're sitting there in, you know, Big Ten country and discussing all that, what you made of the Big Ten being conference to come out in college football and say, hey, we're going to go conference only going into this season.
Well, I was surprised at all of the shock that people had. We've been talking about going all conference games, whether it's the Big Ten, Pac-12, you know, all of the Power Five conferences were talking at some point of, hey, this is a scenario we're exploring. And when they come out and say it, it's all of a sudden it's kind of shock and awe. And I think it gives great flexibility. If you listen to Kevin Warren and the statement that the Big Ten put out, here's an idea that I think would be, you know, terrific. And this is somewhat original, so I guess I do have an original idea. It's, you know, if you've got two divisions in the East and West, and you've got seven teams on each side, you don't know how long this season is going to be. You don't know. Obviously, we hope that, you know, as soon as we start practice, that the virus continues to, you know, diminish and the effects of it, and you could play a full season. But if you can't, put six division games at the very beginning of your schedule. That way, everybody in the East plays each other. Everybody in the West plays each other. And then you have that Big Ten East, Big Ten West, you know, division leader that if you have to, you can say, hey, we're going to take a three-week hiatus and let everything settle down and play a Big Ten championship game. And if you get seven games in, great. You can also put three crossover games at the end. And if you get those in, great. Everything that we have after that, that's all, you know, gravy on top of the old biscuits and gravy in the morning and a side of bacon, because I got to draw in the hogs and all of that stuff into this conversation. But if you have the opportunity to play division games and find out who the best is in your division, you could play a championship game at the very least. We are all begging for something. That would be a great start. And then if you can play some crossover games, if we're talking about bowls, which I think is kind of ridiculous at this time, but if we're talking about a you know, national championship playoff, I think we are all going to be doing somersaults in the front yard.
John, we all want a season. We're all wishing for a season. What do you think the odds are we actually have a college football season?
I still think the odds are good. And it's not – as long as we're making the decision on science, and we all have been around the sports world long enough, and we have all – watch the news, you know, just to no end over the past 4 months in regards to, you can make numbers look however you want them to look. And you can convince yourself of just about anything. But if we look at the science and we look at everything that the actual scientists are saying, I do believe that we will be able to have a football season. Now, is it going to start on time? I don't know that. It could. And if it does, is it going to be a you know, continuous season throughout the, you know, the fall? Again, I don't know that. There might be a point where we have to hit the pause button. But again, if you're going with all conference games, you only have to worry about 14 cities, 14 teams, 14 arenas, you know, or stadiums. You've only got to worry about those 14, you know, entities. And you have much more flexibility in regards to shifting the schedule around, hitting the pause button, hitting the go button. And I think it'll be a benefit for this year to be able to go with that.
John Jansen, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for the expertise. Stay safe, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with us.
You guys do the same. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, John. You notice we didn't bring up his podcast, Michigan Podcast, after last year's Notre Dame-Michigan game.
I was impressed there was a lot of constraint from you guys about talking anything.
There's no reason to get into that stuff.
Nothing at all.
Only a fool trips over what's behind him.
Leave it alone.
I don't know.
Leave it alone.
That's all I have to say. Okay, fine. You know, I'm just saying. We'll see what happens moving forward with all of those things. I still like a cute pig as a mascot, though. I'll die on that.
I'm going to slice
the bacon. That's straight talk. Straight talk wireless. No contracts. No compromise. I mean – the whole stadium could smell like bacon. You could also call it the Warthogs, by the way. Shorten it to Hogs. You have alliteration, and then you can have a cute little warthog.
I mean, listen, it's not unprecedented for a pig or some sort of pig variant to be featured on a helmet. Like, we have the Arkansas Razorbacks, for God's
sake.
I'm
with you. Like, I'm with you. And listen, they are known for the Hogs. God knows I know that, against those guys. So
Washington Warthogs, and then you shorten it to Hogs. And then
Warthogs, no.
Well, I mean, the cute Disney. No. Okay. All right. A cute Disney tie-in, you know?
Why do you want to, on the helmet, like, you don't necessarily need something cute.
You and I are both wearing minor league baseball t-shirts, right? Like, the reason people buy so much minor league baseball swag is because it's cute.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's a great alternate if you want to sell something cute, like a steamed cheeseburger.
I have a cute, angry cheeseburger, right?
I was going to say, there's nothing cute about that. That cheeseburger looks angry as hell. It's ready to tear somebody's head off.
Mike, save us here. We'll get into some UFC, but I believe we've got some trending first to get to. So, nobody's trending, or is somebody trending?
Are we trending or no? We're not trending.
Do you want to make that decision on the fly right
now? We're not going to trend.
Really workshop this in real time, guys. Three weeks left.
It's 3 weeks can't come
modern
soon
technology.
Enough.
Ah! I got senior looking like there's something he wants to say.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure if he was preparing for
something. You know what I was?
Yeah.
Been doing this a while. I'm prepared for the next topic we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay. Why don't we get into that now then? UFC 251 happened over the course of the weekend. By the way, it kept me up way past my bedtime Saturday night.
Yo, that was brutal to deal with. Like,
oh my gosh.
And it was a great card. Like, we were all pumped for this. Like, last week, I think you felt an energy around UFC 251 that wouldn't have been there without Jorge Masvidal being added to the card. Like, we can all admit that, and that was the crown jewel of it. We had a bunch of really good fights leading up to it, but I look up and all of a sudden it's like 2:30 in the morning on the East Coast, where, you know, we're finally getting to the embers of the Usman Masvidal fight, and man, that was a grind to get through. I felt like I went to fight camp.
Well, I mean, it turned out to be certainly not the best fight at all. Masvidal came out strong. Remember, he had to prepare for this in like an hour for this fight, but he's been used to that, so he said that's not going to affect him. He came out strong in that, and then Usman just controlled that fight, won a unanimous decision, no issues at all with that.
What? A lot of seventh grade dancing in that fight too.
I was going to say,
foot stomping.
Could you imagine? I could even. I forgot even that being done, and then I'm seeing foot stomping. I'm like, oh my god, that would hurt.
I have never seen anyone else do that. And I don't claim to be the biggest UFC fan in the world, but I feel like I've watched enough where I would have noticed if toe stomping was a tried and true tactic.
If I got stomped, and I would just look at the guy and go, "Are you serious?
I'd retire on the spot."
That's all I can think. And let me be clear, foot stomping would be brutally painful repeatedly. I get that. All I could picture, though, at that point was like me standing up against Junior just trying to stomp him on the foot to win the fight over and over. Like, it was this agitating move that felt like I couldn't believe we were seeing it. But it's the way that fight went. I mean, it was the strategy to what you both mentioned. Like, Masvidal had this, like, I'm going to come in, try and get a quick blow and maybe make something happen strategy. Usman was just like, I'm gonna tie you up and wear you out over the course of the entire match, which is exactly what he did.
It was smart and it wasn't sexy. Like, Usman wasn't gonna win a bunch of fans. Like everybody said through all this, these aren't like wholly original opinions, but in general, like, that wasn't a visually pleasing fight.
No
one had a great time watching that one outside of the few flurries, because Usman was smart and he knew Masvidal was coming into this one on short notice with this camp. You could see after that first flurry, you don't have to be a UFC expert to know what gas looks like.
Yeah.
We've all had that look before where everything starts looking like you're wearing sandbags around it. And after that first flurry, Masvidal came out firing on all cylinders in that one. And then soon after that, you could see the tank was damn near close to empty.
There were three title fights. The one that I think raised everybody's eyebrow a little bit was Volkanovski against Holloway. And that was a split decision, and that went to the champ, Volkanovski. And there were a lot that thought, okay, this was wrong. Even Dana White said, you know, and we'll get to the sound in a bit because we're running out of time. I just wanted to get the stat in because I was wondering about it. So Holloway loses this one, but many people thought he should have won this one. So I had edit looking up split decisions in title bouts. And because normally it was, if you're going to win the title, you need to win the title. You need a knockout. You need a unanimous decision. And in the last 12 of split decisions in title bouts, the challenger won just three of them. So there's 3-9 in split decisions for a title. In two of those, it was a rematch. So two of those was a rematch. One was a guy who was the champ, and because of injury, had to vacate it. And then the new champ, then the old champ became the challenger. So that was kind of a wacky one. So for the most part, you got to kind of beat the champ if you want to get the belt. And in this one, a lot of people think Holloway did beat the champ to get it. But in a unanimous decision, I think a lot of times it kind of slides toward the champ that you really have to show your wares if you're going to be the challenger and win in a title bout.
And I think it's also worth pointing out, and Junior said this, but the number of our experts that looked at it and said, hey, that fight could have gone either way. Yeah. It's a great point. You got to beat the champ. I think a lot of people were angry about the outcome, but for every person I saw that was angry, I saw smart UFC analysts that were saying it was well called. To me, it was Aldo and Jan that was the most disturbing ending. Woo! To watch. The fact that the ref let him, Aldo, just get the snot beat out of him over and over and over long after that fight should have ended, I thought was sort of a haunting image that will stick with me from the end of UFC 251. All that being said, Fight Island was everything that I hoped it would be and much, much more.